Beer, Cheese, and Murder is a true crime podcast about Wisconsin from Wisconsin. Due to the nature of true crime, this podcast contains explicit and graphic content which may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Beer, Cheese, and Murder. I'm Erica, and joining me are...
Bonnie.
Dina.
Jill.
Kayla.
And Terry.
Woohoo! We made it all the way through in alphabetical order without screwing up.
Without pausing, with nobody on mute, without anybody forgetting what order we go.
No tornado sirens.
No, we're tornadoes. Pros now.
Because it's October in Wisconsin, and of course we had a tornado. Multiple, I believe, actually.
Anyway. Kind of late, though. Normally we don't have them that late.
That's what it said on the news. It was 23 years since we did.
Yeah.
Yep. But anyway, so what are you guys drinking and eating?
Well, since I have an October birthday, I decided to do a seasonal October beer and doing the only Oktoberfest beer that I actually like, which is Leinenkugel's Oktoberfest. It is a seasonal brewed August to October, 5.1 ABV. It is delicious. The description for it on their website says, "Our proud German heritage shines through in our homage to arguably the world's greatest festival. A traditional Märzen-style beer, our Leinenkugel's Oktoberfest has a toasted malt flavor and subtle spicy hop notes that make it perfect for celebrating fall in true German fashion. So let your steins runneth over." So as a good German girl myself, I love Oktoberfest, and it seems like a good October beer for me.
Especially on a night like tonight, 40 degrees.
Old AF outside. And it pairs well with brats, spätzles, pork chops, soft pretzels, and apple cake. And along with that, East Shore Specialty Foods in Heartland, Wisconsin makes some delicious skinny dipping pretzels along with some delicious sweet and tangy mustard.
Yeah.
So get pretzels with some mustard and also some Carr Valley cheese. Out of Laval, Wisconsin, which is in Forest County. I'm not really sure where that is. A late harvest wine spread, which is phenomenal.
I'm like, what?
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
So I must comment that I'm really surprised. I'm familiar with the East Shore pretzels and the mustard. I would have thought that was going to be in Shorewood or something because it's East Shore, but Hartford.
Mm-hmm. Heartland.
That's kind of strange. Or Heartland, whatever.
Nowhere near the shore, right?
That's very west.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, west for when you think of Lake Shore with Lake Michigan. But I guess I'm assuming the shore they're talking about is Lake Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Could be the shore of Waukesha County for all I know. I'm not sure.
The shore of the Shaw.
The shore of the Shaw.
There are many, many lakes in Wisconsin, not just Lake Michigan, that's for sure. But anyway, all right. Well, I see a lot of water, so I will mention what I am drinking and eating. So I have a Bloody Mary, which obviously it's not my first time drinking Bloody Mary on the podcast, but This one is with a different mix than what I've used in the past. So this is Jimmy Loves Bloody Mary mix.
Jimmy Loves.
It is really good.
I like that name.
The spicy one is really spicy, though. It actually shocked me. I like spicy, and it was really spicy.
Yeah, I don't do spicy. But anyway, yeah. But no, this is really good. This is just the original mix, and it's actually really tasty. I didn't add, I did the salt, the celery salt rim, but I didn't add anything extra to it. And it's delicious, aside from the garnish, of course. So
where is Jimmy Loves out of?
Jimmy Loves is out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And on the bottle, it says Jimmy Loves Bloody Mary mix offers that big, bold taste that you won't find in other mixes. Perfected over the course of 25 years and tailgate tested many times over, this party pleaser will make people think you spent hours preparing for and mixing these tasty treats from scratch. Go ahead, shake the bottle, wake the love, and experience the joy of love at first sip.
Yeah, it's a good mix.
It is pretty good. I just
love that name.
I like it better than it's Loves, L-U-V-S, I think, right?
Yes, yeah, L-U-V apostrophe S, yeah, Jimmy Loves, yep.
I like it better than the Zing Zang. People say that they think Zing Zang is the best, and I had the Jimmy Loves, and I prefer that.
I like thicker, like the tomato base, and so I feel like Jimmy Loves has got a really good, like, tomato juice base where it's nice and thick, so... That might be part of the reason why I like it. Some people are, I feel like people are on different sides of the spectrum. They either like it with traditional tomato juice where it's like thicker, or they like like the Clamato, which my dad is, where it's like thinner.
I hate the Clamato juice.
Clamato's so, it's like shrimp flavored tomato juice. It's so gross. Well, it's
clam flavored.
but
Clamato, it's fishy. Yeah.
Fishy. It's just very fishy.
Oh, yeah, that's my dad's. That's my dad's go-to, but I've deviated and I've discovered my own preference. Right now it's Jimmy Loves, actually. It's really good. And then
The Clamato is apparently very popular in Canada. That's I the was first just time I ever say, heard of it was our girls. Canadian friends did Clamato, and that's when I tried it and I'm like, that's nasty. Well, I love it.
My dad was actually sharing a story a little bit, because so talking with him, my parents just went to Florida. They got back. They made it. They went there right after the hurricane.
What part did you go to, Bonnie?
Orlando. And then we were supposed to go to Daytona, but that's pretty much kind of messed up. So then we went to Tampa. My niece lives in Tampa, so we stayed a couple of days there. So.
Was that clear? Because I thought Tampa was hit.
No, Tampa was. No,
that's why it turned.
Yeah.
That's right. We've got three people
that were for us living in Florida, and Tampa was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Boca Raton,
Orlando
got winds and whatever.
Yeah. Orlando, from the plane, you could see a lot of the flooded fields.
Yeah. Yeah. Orlando was
bad. Wow.
Yeah. And even some of the rides at Disney got messed up from it.
Yeah. I guess Sean Erica went to Disney at the right time.
Yeah, literally had 1 week between our trips. And during that week was when the hurricane hit. Yeah. So we went there right before the hurricane hit, and they got there right after. So
beautiful weather, though. 80s. Yeah. It was beautiful.
90s when we were there.
When there was tornadoes coming in, or hurricanes coming in, sorry, they tend to go to Disney. So our programmer that lived in the hurricane area went to Disney, booked a room for a week so that he could continue working. Because Disney has like got it down where they're not gonna go out. They had Wi-Fi, and he showed us a picture, and there were people in the lobby like working with monitors, computers.
That's so crazy. That's insane. But
they actually had things, from what I understand, they actually had things set up for the guests that were in the hotels for doing various things, because they had to stay in the
hotel.
They had to stay there. Yeah. They had like food and everything. So
I didn't even think about that.
I don't know. Disney, they know what they're doing. So I'm not surprised.
It's the best place to go when there's like some type of catastrophe happening. He books a room for a week and that's what he does.
Yeah, I feel like Disney's like first class in like how they do everything. So
yeah,
pretty good. But anyway, to circle back to why we got onto that tangent, when they were at the airport on their way back, my dad called to let me know they were going to be returning, and he was drinking the Bloody Mary at the airport. And I said, oh, how is it? Because I remember when Dina was there in Florida that it wasn't very good. So and he said that it actually was pretty good. But then in talking with him, he was sharing how I don't know. He thinks his Bloody Mary is the best. And so he, but he's got a lot more experience drinking them than I do, let's be honest. But he said that when they used to go up to Hayward, Wisconsin, which is northern Wisconsin, a good 6 hours north from Milwaukee, closer to Canada, he said that they used to have like their own mugs at the bar of Famous Dave's, and they would have Bloody Mary making competitions, who could make the best Bloody Mary. So that's where he really learned how to make a Bloody Mary. So if he learned how to use the tomato juice there, it kind of makes sense that it was in northern Wisconsin, close to Canada. But anyway, long story, tangent.
Interesting. Anyway.
But anywho, so along with the Bloody Mary, I have some cheddar cheese popcorn. And this is actually compliments of Terry, who was staying at our house while we were in Disney World. And
oh my God, that huge, most expensive bag of cheddar cheddar cheese popcorn. Terry.
Good popcorn. It's so good. But anyway, so she went and did some grocery shopping, and she took pity on the poor Boy Scouts out there selling some popcorn.
Oh yeah, that does cost an arm and a leg. I
ran in for a birthday card.
Yeah, so she bought us a container of cheddar cheese popcorn, and so of course, like, I had to dig into it, and nobody else really wanted to touch it, or Sean had no interest. The boys were like, oh, what are you eating? And so then they got into it too. But it's actually, it's from Pecatonica River Popcorn, and it's out of Livingston, Wisconsin. So it's actually Wisconsin made, which I thought was really cool. So I figured I'd highlight it because I thought it was delicious. It goes down
very cool. Support your local Boy Scouts.
I did not even look at it. I just put it on their counter and said, here you go.
Yep. But it worked out really well. So I went onto their website, and just a little bit of information there. It said in 1983, Rural Route 1 popcorn was approached by the U.S. Grant District Boy Scouts of America to produce pails of popcorn to be used as a fundraiser. Pecatonica River Popcorn was established as an exclusive brand solely for scouting use. Upon a successful fall sale in 1983, the Black Hawk Area Council of Rockford, Illinois, joined with Pecatonica River for the fall sale of 1984. Since the initial council sale in 1984, Pecatonica River has had numerous plant and production expansions. In 1992, a new plant was built in the Livingston Industrial Park. In 1998, expansion doubled the original plant size. And in 1999, additional warehousing was constructed. And then in 2004, that warehouse was doubled, and they continued to expand their facility to this day. So that's a lot of growth. So that tells you just how popular this popcorn is, and also how helpful it is to the Boy Scouts if it's solely for Boy Scouts. They got some really good salesmen, that's for sure. These expansions are driven by more and more councils joining the Pecatonica River team. Currently, we serve 37 Boy Scout councils. It says, Pecatonica River's niche has been to provide an individualized program for each council, capitalizing on their strengths and assets. Everything from specific container designs to unique products and specialized forms create a program unique to each council. Sounds like a lot of work to make it so customized. Our goal at Pecatonic River has been and always will be to make the best popcorn possible consistently, efficiently, and with high attention to detail. This goal is what keeps us in business year after year. And I can attest that that is some really good popcorn.
I'm just thinking I really like the word Pecatonica.
Actually, there is, I've actually highlighted a beer. There's a Pecatonica Brewing Company, I think, that I've had some beer from there, unless it's really close and I'm mixing it up, but I'm pretty sure it's the same.
Oh.
So.
Beer and popcorn, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Beer, yeah, Bloody Marys and cheddar popcorn. I feel like that goes pretty well together. All I'm missing is some Bloody Mary cheese curds from Sendix. Good to go.
Yeah, right?
Have you tried those?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They sucked me in when I went to the, they had a whole spread when I went into Sendix, and I could not walk out of the store without Bloody Mary cheese curds.
Huh. Interesting.
They're really good. I highly recommend.
I would think
them.
They would be.
It's football season. You got to stock up on your cheese curds.
I go to the bar for all the football games, so.
Oh, I'm not that social. I'm on the introvert side. Don't want to leave my house.
So I have to tell you that I got my package from Dorpnissel Winery a few weeks ago, and I popped open my bottle of black apple
wine.
Black apple?
Black apple wine, but it said Door Peninsula Cidery, and it was black apple. It was awesome.
It sounds awesome.
It was so good. It was like the perfect dry, sweet, bitter taste. I really loved it.
Huh. Well, I'm going up this week and I'll have to see if
black,
I can.
Black apple wine. Yeah.
Okay. And Door Peninsula wine.
Door Peninsula. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. I will not forget that name because it's so different. Cool.
All right. You guys ready for a Wisco fact?
Yes.
Yep, we are.
And it's not just that Dina got a tornado on her birthday.
Multiple. You got multiple, okay? You're that
multiple.
Yeah, we actually fun fact, we just had an update to our emergency action plan, and I just had training on it the day before, and the topic of like drills for different things like tornadoes came up, and they actually made the comment about how we probably would do a tornado drill in like the spring when it would be like a relevant time of year, because you know we don't get tornadoes in October.
Not generally.
Yeah, we're right.
And then what do you know, Mother Nature decided to prove us wrong. So but nothing like a real life situation to have some hands-on training. Anyway, all right, so Wisco fact. So we're back in Madison, aka Mad City, today. So here's an interesting Madison fact for you. Madison is one of only five digits platinum level bike cities in the United States, and has been named one of the best cities on the planet for biking.
Wow, I didn't know it was the planet.
On Earth, yep. So looking a little bit more into this, so I was like, well, where did this come from? So this ranking comes from the League of American Bicyclists, which is a membership organization that promotes cycling for fun, fitness, and transportation through advocacy and education. It was founded in 1880 and is one of the largest membership organizations of cyclists in the United States.
Wow.
So as of 2015, there are five levels of recognition associated with the ranking of a city as a bike-friendly city. So those levels include bronze, of which there are 267 cities, silver, where there are 75, gold are 24, and then platinum, which includes Madison, is five. So there's five. So I think Madison was the last one to be added. And that was in, I think, 2015. There's also the highest level, of which there are zero cities currently, is Diamond. So right now, the highest level that any cities have actually achieved is Platinum, and Madison is one of them.
Wow. I knew that it was one of the biggest, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and I think they've rated, like, universities as well. So Madison University is also very high ranked, but the city itself in general is ranked as well. So, and some quotes here. It says, when the city of Madison joined with local bike enthusiasts to begin the process to achieve platinum status, many people thought it was an unreachable goal. What a journey, and what a great recognition for the incredible bike paths, bike lanes, a relationship with Trek and B-Cycle, cycling amenities, and the welcoming nature of our city to cyclists. Bicycling in Madison is more than a pastime. It's a way of life, and it has positive impacts on our environment and our transportation system. I am very grateful to the team of bicyclists, the Wisconsin Bike Federation, and city staff that documented our efforts to obtain this elite of recognition. So that was a quote from Madison Mayor Paul Soglin.
Soglin.
And then another quote is, what this says is that any city can be a great cycling city as long as there's commitment from a broad range of city leaders and the population as a whole. This didn't come about overnight. It was a decade-long effort. We had support from city leaders, the business community, and the thousands of cyclists in the Madison area. The lesson we learned is that it has to be a broad-based effort. It can't just come from the top. And that's Dave. Oh, man, this is going to be a hard one. This is definitely Polish. Sesluitz, yes. Executive Director of the Wisconsin Bike Fed and former mayor of Madison. So it sounds like, you know, it just speaks a lot to the community and the city in general, because it literally took the entire city to make it possible. But I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I'm thinking of nominating my favorite bike trail on Mars, though. Like how it said the planet, the best on the planet. Oh, you know, I have my favorite one over on Mars. Dina, you have been biking over on Pluto, right?
Pluto's not a planet.
Where have you been?
Okay, that's disqualified.
I used to when it was still a planet. I used to all the time. I gave up on it though. Oh. Like non-planetary biking.
I couldn't resist when you said the best on the planet.
Well, my notes actually said on Earth, but it's essentially the same thing.
Well, and right. We're achieving the same thing, and I'm being sassy.
I know.
Trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Sorry, readers. I mean, sorry, listeners.
Listeners, not readers.
If you're reading this podcast right now,
yeah, you can't. They can't print this out, Jill. Yeah.
That would be quite a feat.
It was my subliminal messages here. Reading.
All right. Well, considering the topic of this podcast, it's good to get the levity out of the way initially, but this is
levity
because it's only going to go downhill from here as we dive into the case.
All right, what do we got this week?
I previously mentioned that I had the last case I believe we covered was the Drake family murders, which is a really old one. But when I was searching for the story, because I had previously found it, I found another story about a murder. And so that's what kind of led to this episode's case. And so now you're going to understand why they're not connected, but connected. So
it does sound kind of weird when you're like, so I was looking for information about this murder and then found a different murder and like,
Yeah.
Interesting reading that you get to do in preparation for a podcast.
Yeah, you find all sorts of fun stuff. So Thursday, December 8th, 2005, 25-year-old Angela Drake went out to the Dry Bean Saloon to meet up with her best friend, 24-year-old Tanya Turchik.
We used to go to the Dry Bean.
Oh, man.
Good country bar. It's on the west side. Fun stuff.
So the Dry Bean Saloon is located in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, which is where Tanya, the friend of Angela, was living at the time. And the two of them met up at the bar around 10:15 p.m., and hung out for about an hour when Tanya left. The two of them were regulars at the Dry Bean, often walking from Tanya's home, which was about a block away. And even though Tanya and Angela didn't leave the bar together, they were actually planning for Angela to stay overnight at Tanya's apartment that night. So, but they were so comfortable with each other and so much regulars that they didn't have to come and go together. She could stay later and then walk back to Tanya's and crash, stay overnight. So Tanya actually said, I felt comfortable leaving her there because we go there all the time and she was just going to meet me at my place later. Like, no big deal. However, Angela never made it to Tanya's apartment. Initially, Tanya didn't think anything was wrong. When she had left the bar, Angela was talking with a man named Oliver. Angela was single and a grown adult, and the two seemed to be hitting it off. So maybe she could have ended up somewhere else for the evening. However, by Saturday night, Tanya had started to worry. So it was Thursday night that they'd gone out. She didn't end up making it back, but initially didn't think it was a big deal. But then another 2 days passed and she's like, I don't know what's going on. So she had gone out with some other mutual friends of hers and Angela's, and in conversation with each other, she realized that in addition to not showing up at Tanya's that night, that Angela had not returned any calls to her friends since Thursday. So in addition to not seeing her, nobody, including her, had heard from her. So and I think initially when it was just her, she was like, okay, whatever. But when she found out that other people also hadn't heard back, that's when she's like, oh, it's something might be wrong here. They felt that it was actually highly irregular for no one to have heard from Angela. You know, maybe one of them, but all of them not hearing from her seemed very highly irregular. And then she grew even more concerned when she learned that Angela's car had actually not moved from the Dry Bean since Thursday night.
Eesh. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, she said Angie always has her car with her. Even if she left it there that night, she would have been back at 6 a.m. to pick it up. The fact that it was still at the bar was a real red flag to me. So once they had this conversation and she's like, all right, something's going on here. Something's really wrong. She's determined that she should call Angela's family. So she called Angela's father and asked him to call the police. So she didn't want to call the police herself. I think there's something with them wanting the family members to call or something like that. But maybe she felt that they would take it more seriously if it came from a family member versus from her.
So I think anything person's report from a family is, yeah, it's more impactful.
Yeah. So she called her dad, let him know what was going on and asked him to call the police. So Angela Drake was reported missing officially by her father at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, December 10th of 2005. So this is 2 days after she was last seen. News reports went out on Monday, December 12th, 2005, so after that weekend, seeking the public's assistance in locating Angela Drake. This is a clip from a Madison, Wisconsin article. It says, Oregon police are asking for the public's help in locating a woman who hasn't been seen or heard from since last week. Authorities said that they are hoping someone has seen Angela Drake, 25, since she was last seen leaving the Dry Bean Saloon in Fitchburg at 1:30 a.m. on Friday. She allegedly left with a man that she met that night who went by the name of Oliver. Police have obtained surveillance video that was taken that night. Drake's car was left at the dry bean, and she hasn't been to work or contacted family members since. Oliver is described as being 5 feet 11 inches tall and weighing 145 pounds with blondish brown hair worn in a spike style.
Oh, Jimmy.
Man, the 2000s spike style, and is clean shaven.
5'11", 145. He's a beanpole.
Sean, it's Sean before I met him and started feeding him.
That's
Sean's over 6 feet.
Well, he's 5'11", it's only like an inch or two, but like Sean in the winter, before he and I got together, when he was running around and burning so much calories in the winter, he would get down to like 140, like really skinny.
Yeah, Sean's like 140 with 15 pounds of fur on his chest.
Yeah.
Right? Winter sweater.
Sean's like 6'4".
He is not 6'4".
Sean is not 6'4".
He's
taller than Bob, and Bob is 6'2".
No, he's not. He's not taller than Bob. No. I mean, maybe if he's not hunching, he does hunch pretty bad. But I want to say Sean's more like 6'1". I'm pretty sure
he's like 6'1".
Yeah. Yeah. He's not that tall. But anyway. All right, so Oliver was described as being 5 feet 11 inches tall and weighing 145 pounds with blondish brown hair worn in a spike style and clean shaven. And then Angela is 5 feet 4 inches tall and weighs about 117 pounds, and she has blonde hair and green eyes.
So did Oliver's friend come forward after hopefully seeing that, or did Oliver go to the bar by himself?
Well, funny you should mention that. So following the request for information, the police were able to track down the last person that Tanya had been speaking with, had seen speaking with Angela, which was Oliver, and they were able to quickly rule him out as a suspect. So I think because he was specifically identified, they were able to track him down pretty quickly. And they basically, that was the last person Tanya had seen her speaking with, but she had left, you know, a couple hours before Angela left the bar. So I think there's additional interactions that occurred after that. They found him, interviewed him, ruled him out. Through additional tips into the Oregon Police Department, a new person of interest was identified as the last known person to be seen with Angela. And that was 24-year-old Fitchburg man, Michael DeSalvo.
Related to the Hillside Strangler DeSalvo?
No, although I don't think so. Maybe it requires some further investigation. Once identified, the police were able to execute a...
Sorry, I'm talking to myself. I was wrong about the Hillside Strangler.
Who's there?
I'm like, wait, that's Bianchi and Bono. Who's the Hillside Strangler? Like, who's DeSalvo? Somebody who's DeSalvo. Sorry, I'm trying to get all my criminals, my serial killers, and straight in my head here.
Yeah. I've been listening to podcasts again lately, so there's a lot of criminal information in my brain too. Lots of names. Just re-listening to a Monster podcast.
So yeah,
I listened to the Atlanta Monster season, and then I just finished the one on the Zodiac. And that one's never been solved. So there's a lot of speculation and theories on who it could be. Anyway.
Oh, Albert DeSalvo. That's what I'm thinking of. Serial killer Albert DeSalvo, the Boston Strangler. I knew the name.
Welcome to your crime podcast, everybody.
Right. Let's talk serial killers. All right, sorry, back to Michael DeSalvo.
Yes, okay. So once identified, the police were able to execute a common tactic, and they arrested him on other charges to get him into custody while they continued their investigation. So if at first you cannot get them on the charge you want to, get them for what you can. Mm-hmm. DeSalvo was arrested at midnight Monday, December 12, 2005. So pretty quick, because that story came out that same day, in connection to drug charges in Dane County Circuit Court, as well as a probation violation connected to felony theft charges in Minnesota. DeSalvo was in court on Tuesday for a bail hearing on the charges he was arrested for. He failed to appear for a felony charge after he was found with Oxycontin in September. So those were the drug charges from Dane County. And he was wanted on an absconder warrant for violating his probation in Minnesota, where Assistant District Attorney Michael Verveer said DeSalvo has a court record several pages long. Sounds like.
And how old is this guy? 24?
24.
24. Yeah.
He's an overachiever.
Yes.
An over criminal achiever.
Yeah. Sounds like a nice guy.
Underachiever in life, overachiever in crime.
Yeah. Right.
While DeSalvo was in court, police executed a search warrant at a duplex connected to DeSalvo, as well as on his car. DeSalvo had been living with a couple and a friend at the duplex for the past 2 months. The couple had taken him in when he said he needed a place to stay. So probably at least like he's on the run from Minnesota, apparently. So needed somewhere to crash. Although if somebody needed a crash and they were there for 2 months and they're still not moving out, I'd stay.
Yeah.
Unless it's Cape. Unless it's Cape.
Okay.
Well, I have a feeling this guy is not like cleaning and doing the dishes. So.
Yeah, I was loading, emptying the dishwasher, cleaning, organizing. I mean, ask Dina as well. Ask Aunt Carrie. I'm a fabulous house guest.
That's why you are the exception.
Yeah. I will Marie Kondo the shit out of your house. I will get everything.
I've got a list, Kayla. I want you to come back.
I personally don't know what she's talking about. She didn't do any of that crap at my house. So honestly, she must have done it at yours. She didn't do it at mine. You said to ask me.
Oh my God.
Oh, man. All right, so he's crashing with this couple, and they still apparently haven't gotten tired of him after 2 months. So that was the duplex that the police searched. So it wasn't even his duplex. It was just a place where he was crashing, but he was connected to it. So they made sure that they searched it. Court documents also showed his profession was a plumber, which, I mean, you could actually make some pretty good money as a plumber. So it's an honest profession.
Oh, yeah.
And so his prior employer was identified as Badger Spray Supply and Repair in Madison, Wisconsin. So I don't know if he was actively working at that time, but that was where he was at least previously employed. And that was what he did, was he was a plumber. At the time that he went to court on those other charges, so the drug charges and then the absconder warrant for violating probation in Minnesota, his bail was set at $50,000.
Can you tell me what an absconder warrant is? I know that I've heard it, but I don't know what it is.
Well, he's not showing up, is my guess.
Yeah, so he's
absconded, okay. Like you take off with the money, abscond with the money.
I don't know.
Absconded.
I mean, abscond definition.
You're a legal person. So.
I don't do criminal though, and I don't. And
I mean,
my vocabulary is pretty good, but I didn't know what abscond didn't come up in my brain as something that I knew what it meant.
I mean, I'd have to look it up to know exactly, but based on abscond and what it says here, so it sounds like he violated his probation in Minnesota, whether he violated it by leaving the area, because usually I think a term of probation is that you have to stay like local. obviously yeah. he's not local if he's in Wisconsin. So you took off and went to a different state. But it could very well be that he violated his probation, and then rather than face the music, he bailed. And so therefore they figure he absconded, and they had a warrant out based on that, that this guy's on the run from a warrant for him being on the run. Hold that thought.
I'm going to start using that in a sentence now that I have the definition in my head.
That's right. Abscond. Abscond with the money.
I'm going to do it.
Abscond with the beer.
Oh, we lost Erica. Where'd she go?
All of a sudden, Erica's not in her Zoom queue.
Erica has absconded her podcast.
She's back. She absconded from the podcast.
Absconded from the podcast.
Sean and the boys aren't home yet, and Ella is being obnoxious. So rather than have her interrupt the podcast, I had a quick letter outside. So absconded to the front door.
Okay, here you go. Abscond. Leave hurriedly and secretly, typically to avoid detection of or arrest for an unlawful action such as theft. And then it has in a sentence of a person on bail, fail to surrender oneself for custody at the appointed time. That wasn't a sentence, but it says, quote, charges of absconding while on bail.
Okay. Interesting. I've heard the word before. I just didn't know. Thank
right,
you.
Didn't know it was like an official charge. That
he's yeah. on the lamb. Okay.
Yeah. He's on the abscond.
I feel like we learn lots of fun terms in this podcast.
We do. Levity. It's the opposite of what I thought it was.
All right. Okay. So they got him for these other charges. They took him to court, set his bail at $50,000. In the meantime, they're still searching. All this happened pretty quickly, which is a good thing when you have a missing person, because you don't know if, especially in it's winter in Wisconsin, you're going to want to find this person as quickly as possible. So she was last seen in the wee hours of Friday, December 9th. So like 1:30 a.m. was when they said they saw her leaving the bar. It is now Monday, December 12th, where he is initially arrested after they get some tips that he was one of the last people that she was actually with. And then he's in court on December 13th and having his bail set. The next day, Wednesday night, December 14th, police searched the rural Fitchburg neighborhood of the duplex where DeSalvo was staying for additional clues to determine what happened to Angela. So they had a warrant initially to search the duplex as well as his car, and now they're searching around the area of that duplex, so not just the duplex itself. The neighborhood was about 5 miles from the driving saloon, so not terribly far. Police specifically were searching a wooded area near the intersection of Whalen and Fitchburg Roads. And while DeSalvo was considered a primary person of interest at the time of the search, police indicated to reporters that that was not the reason for the search of that area. I'm not sure if that's entirely an honest statement, but they said it was just on a prioritized list of places to search. So got a bunch of different places to search, but I'm sure it was prioritized partly because of the proximity to a location connected with the primary person of interest.
Yeah,
so
you'd think.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't know if they're just trying to, I don't know, not get in trouble for saying that he's the guy before they actually had any evidence to support that he's the guy. I don't know. So police still considered the case to be that of a missing person at this point. So they're just trying to find Angela. And at this point, they think she's just missing. They don't suspect that she is no longer with us at this point.
They don't suspect, or they do suspect?
They're not treating it as a
murder.
recovery. There's still like it's still like a rescue. Like
that's, okay, that's okay. The best so way they I do think of it. Like, think that she could still be alive right, and that somewhere. She could
still be alive. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
As the days continued to pass with no signs of Angela, the worry of friends, family, and the community grew. A candlelight vigil was held in Angela's honor on Friday, December 16th. So this is a week after she was last seen. And while no evidence initially found led police to believe that foul play was a factor, each day made it more and more of a concern. Angela's mother, Ann Olson, said for her daughter not to call family and friends was unusual. She said, "We talked a lot on the phone, and she talked even more with her friends. She calls back and forth to her friends a lot every day throughout the day."
Yeah.
Phone calls to Angela's cell phone went straight to voicemail since early Friday morning, December 9th. The only conclusion being that the phone was either turned off, was out of power, or was no longer in Angela's possession. Hopefully you can't hear Ella barking outside.
Oh, I don't hear her at all. Good deal. She wants to come in. Go let her in.
She's not. No, she's barking at her phantoms.
Okay.
Yeah. Or neighbors. Who knows?
Maybe there's a cow on your porch again.
No.
That was the best.
Wait, a cow on the porch again?
No, not again.
No, I said maybe.
Maybe
that's what she's barking.
I feel like that's like a once in a lifetime opportunity.
I would think so.
You would hope.
Yeah. Although now it wouldn't be completely trapped. It could technically go over the edge. It just, I don't know if that would work out so well for the cow.
Yeah.
All right. Back on topic. A week after Angela's disappearance, Tom Allen, another individual living at the duplex with DeSalvo, shared additional information about the night that Angela was last seen. Tom Allen told 27 News, DeSalvo and Angela ended up at the men's duplex. Tom remembered Angela singing country karaoke at the Dry Bean Saloon. So essentially this Tom guy is not only putting her as being in the presence of DeSalvo, but and leaving the bar with DeSalvo, but then at another location puts her in the duplex where they searched. So Tom remembered Angela singing country karaoke at the Dry Bean Saloon. So seeing as Dina used to frequent there, you sing some country karaoke as well?
I don't know if I ever did karaoke at the Dry Bean, but I do like me some karaoke for sure. I'm not good at it, but I do it anyway. I'm not a good singer, but I do like karaoke.
Again.
Our hostess is gone again.
You're just like dipping out.
He gone.
Oh.
You let Ella in?
Yep.
All right.
At one point in the evening, Angela joined Tom's group and his friends or group of friends, which included DeSalvo. So Tom was acquainted with this DeSalvo. Tom said Angela was intoxicated enough that his group offered her out or to help her out. You know, if she needed a place to stay, she could come back to their house and sleep it off, and then someone could give her a ride home. So it sounds like at least he and some of the other individuals within this group had good intentions of trying to help her out and make sure that she got somewhere for the night safely, and to make sure that she got safely home the next morning. At that point, Tom said Angela left with his roommate DeSalvo. So she specifically left with DeSalvo.
I can't imagine having to talk to the cops and say this about one of my friends.
Well, I last saw him with this person, we were all hanging out. That's my friend that the girl went with, and now she's missing. And like, eek, could my friend do that? Like, that's awful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a short time later, so initially Angela left with DeSalvo, and then a little while later, the rest of the group that was at the bar left and went back to the duplex. So they all ended up back at the same place. Tom said one of his roommates saw Angela in DeSalvo's room. Quote, she was on the bed and she was on her back on the bed lying down.
Okay.
So it gets worse and worse.
Presumably alive.
Yep. That's the last Tom recalled before he went to bed. So that's the last he remembered from the night. They all came back to the duplex. She was a new part of the group, but she was there to crash. She had gone back with DeSalvo and was apparently in his room. So take that for what you will. He probably didn't think anything of it. Next morning, Tom watched DeSalvo come out of his room alone. He said, DeSalvo told me that she was no longer there. He took her where she needed to go, that everything was okay, that she was where she needed to go, which initially, when they offered her a place to stay, it was, hey, come crash and somebody will take you home in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his assumption then is, okay, he must have taken her home.
Somebody did, yeah.
Not uncommon at all for 24, 25-year-olds, especially right. in the Madison area, because at that time, I mean, it's still safer than here, but a very safe community area. So very common, I would think.
So I think after that, it was like, okay, went on with his day, went on with his life, didn't think anything more of it. At least not until a few days later, when Tom saw Angela's photo online, along with the appeals for people to help find her. He said, my heart dropped. What scared me was her car and her phone were still at the driving. It made me wonder what was going on. I feel nervous, anxious, just hoping this girl would be found alive. I just feel bad. I just feel I could have done something a little more, said Tom.
He's got to feel like that. And there's, I mean, what could he have done? But I would probably feel like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that you saw them.
Mm-hmm. And according to Tom, DeSalvo's mood and routine were unchanged after their night out with Angela. So if he did do something to her, nothing in his demeanor seemed to give him away as anything being amiss. So you would have had no reason to suspect him. And so even when then he's wondering, like, okay, is what he told me true? Could he have done something to her? He's probably still questioning himself of like, he's my friend. I shouldn't even be thinking like this. Like, he seems perfectly fine, perfectly normal. Like, what am I thinking? Like, you know, you start questioning everything at that point.
The friend must be a sociopath.
Right. Fitchburg detectives discovered the body of a young female at 11:35 a.m. on Thursday, December 22nd, just shy of 2 weeks after Angela Drake went missing. The body was found in a culvert on a farm in the town of Oregon, near where authorities had been searching for Angela since December 9th. So she's found very near to the search area. Dane County Coroner John Stanley said a positive identification would not be confirmed until an autopsy could be performed, which was to be conducted the following Monday. So let's do the math here. Thursday is the December 22nd. 23rd would have been Friday. Yeah,
day after Christmas.
Rough. Ugh. Oh my god.
Oh,
that family had to have been like tortured.
Like, there's no good time to ever have this happen, but around the holidays has to make it that much harder on a family.
That would be like the worst. I'd never want to celebrate Christmas again. I feel like
ever.
It'd be terrible. The body was discovered on Storytown Road near Sun Valley Parkway in the town of Oregon during part of the continuing investigation in her disappearance. The area is about 5 miles south of the duplex where DeSalvo was staying. During a press conference following the discovery, Fitchburg Police Chief Thomas Blatter said the female doesn't appear to have died of natural causes. When asked whether anything was covering the body when it was located, Blatter reported there was only snow around the site. The owner of a nearby farm said that he and his neighbors would have been up and down that road 3 or 4 times daily in the time since Drake disappeared. But if a body were under the bridge, it would not be visible from the road, he said. So it was apparently concealed just enough that it went undiscovered even when they were searching and there were people passing by on a regular basis.
Ugh. Hiding in plain sight, basically.
Mm-hmm. Following the discovery of the body, Fitchburg Police Chief Tom Blatter said late Friday that his office had referred charges of first-degree intentional homicide to the Dane County District Attorney's Office against Michael DeSalvo in Angela's death. However, should be noted that at this point in time, the identity of the body found had not yet been officially confirmed, as the confirmation would occur at the autopsy the following Monday. So even just like that same day, they were like, or the day after her body was found, they were like, this guy did it. They felt pretty confident it was her, but they couldn't officially do anything at that point. So this statement revealed a lot in terms of the investigation. He's kind of showing his hand at this point.
Yeah, for sure. He's got to have enough to make the charge.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did. He's, I think, referring the charges or recommending the charges, but the district attorney's office would actually have to file the charges. So he's basically making it public that this is what he thinks needs to happen, but it's not really his call at this point. The evidence that's been collected and the interviews that have been done with his roommates and others have led us to believe we have sufficient evidence to refer charges, Blatter said. Dane County District Attorney Brian Blanchard said his office was referring or was reviewing police reports, but that no decisions on charges have been made. I think essentially at that point is they need things. They need to cross their T's and dot their I's before they can officially make charges, because otherwise you run the risk of it getting thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
A search warrant from that time revealed more details of the investigation and the theory of investigators. So it kind of showed more of what exactly they had against DeSalvo. So the warrant provided the foundation for a probable cause arrest affidavit. The warrant implied that DeSalvo asphyxiated Angela after a night of drinking at the Dry Bean Saloon and then left her in the town of Oregon Culvert wearing only a sweater and possibly still alive.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh, still alive. So he brought her back to the hotel, or back to the duplex, and then
he strangled her, and then left her in the cold. That's December, in Wisconsin.
Probably tried doing something.
Probably thought she was dead, maybe.
More, I mean, possibly, but yeah, I don't know. Forensic pathologist Dr. Robert Huntington told police that the cause of death would officially be determined after receiving the results of several tests, but that the aspirations found in her lungs would be consistent with asphyxiation. He also told police that he couldn't yet determine if she was dead when left in the culvert. In other words, if the asphyxiation actually was the cause of death or if she had actually frozen to death.
Ugh.
Wording in the affidavit stated that if she had been left alive, any person would be aware that the conduct of leaving an intoxicated human being on the ground in those weather conditions would be practically certain to have the result of causing her death. So in other words, if somebody did leave her, they knew she wasn't going to make it. And it's basically that they intended to kill her. Police said that they have DNA and clothing evidence that implicate DeSalvo. According to the warrant, Angela's DNA matched blood taken from DeSalvo's mattress, as well as some clothing found in his sport utility vehicle, or his vehicle that they searched. Investigators also recovered some burnt debris from a garbage can in DeSalvo's duplex, from which Angela's state ID was recovered.
Jeez.
Burned her ID.
Yeah.
Tried to.
Yes. Tried to.
Clearly did not succeed. While we may never know the full truth of what happened that night, the fateful encounter of Angela Drake and Michael DeSalvo led to the untimely and tragic death of Angela. At some point during questioning, DeSalvo admitted to having met Angela at the Dry Bean Saloon for the first time and that he had befriended her before inviting her over to his apartment. So that was the first time that the two of them had ever encountered each other at the Dry Bean Saloon. However, he insisted that on waking up the following day, he just happened to find Angela to be unresponsive and thought that she had died.
Really? He wouldn't go tell his freaking roommates, oh my God, like call 911. This girl is like,
well, not a normal person.
Right. You're not going to walk out and tell your roommates, oh, I took her home. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Casually. Not going to casually say, right. Oh.
Exactly. Like,
yeah,
there would be no reason to, if you didn't do anything wrong, right. To run right. out and tell your roommates, oh my God, I'm panicking, like help.
She's a 25-year-old woman. Who would think that she would just die of natural causes? Like, it doesn't.
I mean, that may have happened.
It could happen. It does happen.
But if you're not guilty of doing it, like Dana said, why wouldn't you run out and say, I need help?
Yeah. Well, according to DeSalvo, anxious to avoid the police, if not for his criminal record, then for sure because he had just murdered someone, DeSalvo claimed that he put Angela in his truck, drove to the drainage ditch, and disposed of her body. So I think the reason why he didn't say anything was because he actually killed her and he did something wrong. But he claimed that
she was dead and she wasn't.
Yeah, he's got that. Well, I got a criminal. Well, either way, I think he caused her to be in a state where he thought she was dead.
Yeah.
But I think he's like, oh crap, I got a criminal record. I don't want to get in trouble for this. So he's tried to cover it up.
And yet he's all calm talking to his roommate the next day.
And doesn't appear to have been affected in any way whatsoever. Right.
Yeah.
As it happened, Angela's official cause of death was confirmed to be hypothermia. She was alive when she left outside.
She Jesus. Conceivably could have been saved.
Yeah, if they had found her sooner, like right away, they could have saved her. It's hard to say like just how long somebody could survive in those types of weather conditions. I mean, maybe by the time she had been reported missing, it might have been too late already. And she also could have been further affected by the damage done from the asphyxiation.
Yeah.
But it just makes it almost worse that she died from just in the cold.
Yeah.
Totally preventable.
Oh, terrible. Naturally, investigators did not believe DeSalvo's story. They did not believe that he just woke up and thought she was dead and left her in the cold.
Good.
And he was charged with first degree intentional homicide and the concealment of a body. Michael DeSalvo pleaded no contest to first-degree reckless homicide, narrowly missing a first-degree murder conviction. Prosecutors and the defense had agreed to a 15-year sentence for Michael DeSalvo in the death of Angela Drake, which is kind of a slap in the face.
15 years, that's nothing.
Yeah, but...
For a young guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd definitely make it back out. And he's got that criminal record. It's kind of a...
That's why I'm surprised it would only be 15 years. He's already a criminal.
Well, like,
he's already shown his hand as to what kind of guy he is.
Yeah, I don't know. So that was what was agreed to between prosecutors and defense. But thankfully, the judge has a say as well. And Dane County Judge Robert DeChambeau sentenced DeSalvo to 25 years in prison.
Good on him. I like that judge already.
Yep. And he was also sentenced to an additional 10 years of extended supervision, which the judge allowed him to serve in Minnesota, provided he didn't return to Wisconsin. So he's like, get the fuck out of my state.
Get out of my state.
Yeah.
Don't come back.
At present. Yeah.
Happy about that judge, because that doesn't always happen.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it can be a positive and a negative depending on what side of the case you're on and whether they like make it worse for the criminal or better for the criminal. But I mean, it's pros and cons, right? But sometimes the judge being able to exercise that type of power is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not, but in this case, it worked out. So at present, DeSalvo remains incarcerated at the Stanley Correctional Institution in Stanley, Wisconsin, and could be released in 2031. So we still have a few more years with him.
Where the hell is Stanley, Wisconsin?
That's a good question.
Sorry to any listeners in Stanley, Wisconsin, but I've never heard of your town.
Heard of a Schwabenon and Oconomowoc and all those fun places, right? But not Stanley.
I don't know Stanley.
I saw Brian do that.
Yep. Nope. So pause to investigate where Stanley, Wisconsin is. Not quite to Hayward. And not that far from Minnesota. So that's a good thing, because that's going to be his next stop. Once he gets out, we're going to kick his ass over to the border. But anyway.
All right.
Good enough. The impact of Angela's disappearance and murder had a lasting impact on not just her friends and family. It impacted the community, and especially the women. Following her disappearance, some female customers of the Dry Bean Saloon became leery of leaving the bar alone. People shouldn't go to after bar parties with people they don't know, Clanton said. Of course, when you've been with somebody since 8, by 1 a.m., you think you know them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 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 oh. Especially after a few drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's a different picture.
I mean, and it was never my thing, but plenty of people, especially at that age and in college, I mean, it's not uncommon to go home with somebody that you just met. I mean...
Yeah.
And we're Midwesterners, so we're all like, you know, girls go into the bathroom and 10 minutes later they come out and they're like best friends. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's just how Midwesterners are, too.
What's your sign?
What's your sign? Oh, my God. Inside joke. It's apparently the new thing with the young ladies now, is they all discuss their horoscopes with people, and that's all, they become all BFF-y.
In the bathrooms. And, oh, you're Pisces? I'm a Pisces. We should hang out. They just met each other in the bathroom at the bar. Like,
I don't know. I'm destined to butt heads with everyone. I'm an Aries. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I don't know that much about... I know just the basics when it comes to horoscopes. But
same.
I guess I won't fit in with the young crowd or the my age crowd or the older crowd. Just be me. But yeah, so a little bit about Angela so that we remember who the victim of this case was. Angela was the oldest of three children, and she was extremely social and outgoing. She was a regular at the Bean and liked to sing Janis Joplin songs at Thursday night karaoke. She played piano as a child. She competed on the Oregon High School tennis team. And at one point, she even taught Sunday school.
Wow.
Her best friend, Tanya, said the two bonded in high school because they both had the same blunt, tell it like it is personality.
I thought you were almost going to say they're the same sign.
No. Who knows? Maybe they are.
Maybe they were.
Angela had always gravitated towards being around children, and her pursuit of a nursing degree at Madison Area Technical College was an extension of that. At the time of her death, Angela was working as a licensed practical nurse for REM Health Wisconsin, a home health care company, and many of her clients were children.
Man.
So she was a light in the dark. Nancy Drake, Angela's grandmother, said her granddaughter Angela helped many. I've heard fantastic things from a lot of people whose lives she touched, Nancy Drake said. She will be sorely missed.
It's so sad.
Yep, definitely not a fun one. So this is somewhat of a, I guess, topical highlight. And I guess it seems like a good thing, silver lining, if you will, bright side, I don't know, coming on the wake of the story of Angela. I think it's a good thing to keep in mind for this type of event. Like we said, make sure that you don't just think you know somebody after spending a few hours with them at the bar. So the high note for this episode is as we are approaching, we are in October, we're approaching Halloween. There's the 5th annual Halloween bar crawl in Madison. So don't miss the biggest crawl of the year. So when and where? It is Saturday, October 29th from 4 p.m. to midnight. Essentially, it says 11:59, but I'm just going to say midnight. So again, spending 8 hours with somebody at a bar or multiple bars does not mean you know them. Make sure you go with friends. Make sure people know where you are. Make sure that you have means of contacting people and that somebody is going to raise the alarm if they don't hear from you. All right. So locations, there's obviously multiple locations. So it says check-in time is 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Red Rock Saloon. Crawl locations, which are subject to change from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. It says Chasers 2.0, Danny's Pub, Hawks Bar and Grill, Red Rock Saloon, the W, Wando's, which
the only Wando's is the only one of that list I even know.
I was going to say, the only thing I remember about Wando's is fish bowls.
Yeah. I know Wando. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Whiskey Jack Saloon. And then more venues are to be announced. And then if you go to the website, each location will have or should have specials. Some of them have the specials already identified. Man, this brings back like not many, but very few memories from when I actually went to bars, which was like a handful of times. But anyway, so
Danny, I went to the bars all the time. That's why I'm so surprised that I don't know most of those places, because they would, I mean, it's got to be all within the University Avenue area, because that's where Wando's is. And W is on Regent. That's like a hotel, but there's a bar in there. But besides those two, I have no idea where any of them are.
Yeah, it's just, it's got, so Danny's Pub has $3 kamikaze shots, green tea shots, lemon drop shots. That's the only thing that brings any bells for me. Domestic beers and double rail mixers. So it says, don't drink and drive. We highly suggest using Uber or Lyft to and from the bar crawl. And then there's also some frequently asked questions. It says 100% cancellation refund guarantee. So in the event of cancellation, for any reason, all tickets will be refunded in full. No vouchers, no credits, just your money back in your bank. So I think that's if the event itself is canceled. They got some kind of fun pictures, I think, from previous bar crawls. It looks like people kind of really get into the costumes. And you would be surprised, there's not that many slutty college girl costumes. So I can get.
I am surprised by that.
I am too.
So it says what you can get by doing this. So it says $1,000 grand prize costume contest entry. So it's probably why people really get into
$1,000.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. You're not going to win with a slutty nurse.
No.
$1,000 on the line.
No.
I think I think the one that we won at a bar when we did Madonna Through the Ages, I think we won like $50, maybe $100. So $1,000. Maybe, wow, cover, that's maybe awesome. Cover your
beer tab.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, well, I'd be fine with that too.
You can get some pretty creative and like intellectual costumes when you get close to campus. That's for sure. Halloween is always a big thing for Madison, especially on the college campus. So you also get 2+ drinks or shots included with ticket, crawl with US Stadium Cup. Oh boy. First 400 check-ins, exclusive drink specials, food specials at partner venues, wave cover at all venues, which that's definitely saying something.
Yeah.
Professional photographers, awesome after parties, and custom Halloween badge with vouchers. And so the vouchers themselves are only valid at the venues posted on the site. And tickets really are not that expensive. It looks like it's $10 to $20. So, I mean, you could be paying well more than that just in cover fees to get into any of these venues. So, looks like fun. If you're not me, I'm just kidding. No, I mean,
I already have Halloween plans.
If you're a lot younger.
Yeah, good point.
I'll be out partying for Halloween on that night. And I am old. So
the 34-year-old will not be partying, but Dina will.
Yep. You betcha. I already have my costume and everything.
Betcha.
The most partying I'll be doing on Halloween is maybe taking the kids trick-or-treating. And overdosing on candy.
And I might be going with you.
Oh man. But yeah, that's about it. So that's what I had for this one.
Excellent. That's, yeah, it's really sad.
It is.
I mean, most of these are sad, but like you said, it just kind of hits a little different because she was left there alive and had somebody found her, or had he not been such a piece of shit, he could have anonymously called even to get somebody to help her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it is also good to, is, I mean, because nobody ever thinks that something like this is going to happen, especially in these types of areas where this type of thing just doesn't happen that frequently. Mm-hmm. Obviously it can happen anywhere. It all depends on who the, you know, you run into a bad person. A bad person is going to be a bad person regardless of where they are. But it just, I think it's, especially when you're young like that, when you take more risks and to some degree you think you're invincible, or you just are still in that phase where you're making mistakes and learning about life. You know, you don't know what mistake you make is going to be the last mistake. And so just having that reminder, you know, for those that are interested in going out and having fun for Halloween and maybe getting a little bit more carefree than you might normally get or whatever, it's just a good reminder to make sure that you are connected with people, that you are being safe, that people know where you are, that they have your contact. You know, it's good to have people that care about you that can make sure that you're gonna be okay. But
and friends, yep. Don't leave friends.
Well, yes,
biggest thing, don't leave your friends.
I think that's like a lot of what I see with these types of stories is like you go out together, you stay together, like yeah. No matter what. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway. So it's, you can obviously go out, have fun, have a good time, let your hair down, but surround yourself with people that you truly do know and make sure that you guys are looking out for each other and that you're going to be safe. So that's all I got to say. But next case will be somewhat connected to this as well. It's another one that I found when I was doing the same search. So we'll kind of go into that. I think on my horizon is that after that one, maybe doing another Oh My Nerves, which will be fun and mix things up a little bit. But with that, thank you for listening. Hopefully you keep listening. Hopefully we're not boring you. Keep things interesting. But until next time, eat, drink, and be wary. Thank you for listening to Beer, Cheese, and Murder. We would like to also thank the references that make this podcast possible. A full list of references can be found on our website at beercheeseandmurderpodcast.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at beercheeseandmurderpod, where pictures from today's episode are available for your viewing. If you would like to share your feedback, Wisco facts, case suggestions, stories, or just whatever, please email us at contact@beercheeseandmurderpodcast.com. Don't forget to tell your friends, but most importantly, until next time, eat, drink, and be wary.